are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Friday, December 6, 2019. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Brandon Sutton from The Discourse will be with us in studio. Also on the program today, David Feldman from The David Feldman Show will be with us. It's Casual Friday, folks. It's never really casual anymore these days. Subpoenaed call logs show Rudy and Trump used unsecured lines in hatching their Ukrainian scheme. Another mass shooting leaves three dead in Pensacola. The Senate confirms eight Trump lifetime court picks in 3 days, including one who was ranked not qualified by the ABA. Uber discloses 3,000 reports of sexual abuse and 235 rapes in its vehicles in 2018. And new poll shows that Democratic nominees should embrace pot to win in 2020.
Hell yeah.
H.R. 4 looks to hit the floor of the House. It's a bill to restore Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act. 1.5 million people march in France against austerity. 1.5 million. Suspensions handed out in a West Virginia prison guard Nazi salute photo scandal. White House quashes the Armenian genocide resolution again. Bernie introduces a $150 billion plan for high-speed internet across the country. And Pelosi looks to strip internet companies' liability shield from the new NAFTA. All this and more on today's program. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Pleasure to have you. I'm wearing my soft-collared shirt. We're wearing a lot of hoodies are happening right now in the studio because it's Friday. And actually, that happens almost every day.
Yeah, I do a hoodie pretty much.
I do not wear the hoodie, and Brendan does, and Michael wears a hoodie quite a bit.
I'm wearing a fancy hooded sweatshirt, all right?
All right, so a hoodie.
It's
a hoodie.
There's no zipper. It's fancy.
All right. Well, it's
French. It's Canadian.
Still a hoodie, just a slightly different style of hoodie. Couple of bits of house cleaning before we head off into this program today. Folks, we're heading towards that time of the year where we look back on the year and we play the best of interviews of the past year on this program. So if you have suggestions, and I know some people have already emailed in the past, and we'll search through there, but put the words best of in your subject line and send them to majorityreporters@gmail.com, best of. And we will endeavor to make your pick our picks for the end of the year. I think we're probably going to do six best of shows. Maybe that it depends on when the weekend falls over the course of our vacation in Christmas. And then, of course, we'll put we do deep archive stuff for members. So you get stuff from way back during the old Majority Report with Janine and I. And maybe some other stuff mixed in there.
Well, for the Christmas shows, we do best of the year show And right. then the best of like the fun half stuff afterwards. So we don't do the archives for Christmas shows typically.
Oh, okay. All right, Matt. Yeah, I'm glad you're on that. That's exactly what you should be doing, being on top of that. Good. There you go. So best of, and we'll do that. And also, if you have suggestions, folks email and ask at this time of year, suggestions for charities, organizations that you think people should contribute to, and you have suggestions, send them to us at majorityreporters@gmail.com. People ask that all the time. I've been doing over the past couple of years a lot of immigrants' rights places. And but if you have your own version of things that you want to talk about, send them our way at majorityreporters@gmail.com. And then lastly, again, if there's anything that you don't understand that we keep referring to on this program, like why does Michael have a character, Nelson Mandela, as a right winger? Why did that happen? Or, you know, what is this whole...
We don't know who Devin Nunez's phone was hands into. We don't know. Whole thing's a disgrace.
Or why is Waterboat? Why does that come up all the time with like some like stoned voice? Send us in.
This book Arthur Miller did and in a boat. Sorry.
Send us an email at majorityreporters@gmail.com and write the word meme in the subject line. And we will put that on our meme list, which will be coming out shortly. And, you know, things move slow around here, folks. So just calm down, please. Please, the everyone.
Deliberate pace we keep.
Yes, exactly.
Intentionality.
Yes, exactly. That's the way we roll. So I'd like to welcome in studio Brandon Sutton. He is the host of The Discourse. Do you have anybody else on that show?
Oh, yes. I have two co-hosts who remain nameless because I like to be a center of attention.
All right. There you go. So it's all about you. And,
no, it's their names are Dare and Richard, to be fair.
Okay. Fair enough. That was pretty fair of you. And all right. So welcome to the show. And let's first start with this clip. Now, obviously, looking back on this week, we have there has been. We had a big impeachment hearing. It's the third impeachment that we've had in this. You know what I want to get to before with that? I just want to talk about this before we get into the impeachment, because I don't want to forget this.
How fast
really
it's going.
As you know, the Nancy Pelosi has been hell-bent on trying to pass this USMCA, whatever. Yeah, the U.S.-Mexico-Canadian agreement. This is basically the new NAFTA. It's not dramatically different from the old NAFTA. It supposedly is going to have more labor protections, particularly in Mexico. One of the things that's been slowing it down is that they've been killing trade unionists in Mexico, which seems to run contrary to the spirit of protecting labor. And so that has slowed the roll of this. And apparently, I think in a bid in some way to woo, I'm not sure who, I don't know how the whip count goes. Pelosi is now pushing to strip out what are referred to in the Wall Street Journal, sweeping legal protections for online content in the new trade pact with Mexico and Canada. This, as folks may know, if you are an internet company, but for SESTA FOSTA, which recently put a slight, carve out in this, there are broad protections from liability from what happens on your websites, because a lot of it's user created content, and there's only so much liability that people should assume. This is slightly controversial, though, because it's a question of like how much of a responsibility do you have to police these things? If you're Facebook and Google, what happens is that sometimes this liability is just basically a way for you to save money and not have to actually hire real people to do any of this work. What's fascinating about this, though, to me, and I think this tells you what is so problematic of these type of so-called trade deals. Spokesman for Nancy Pelosi said, there are concerns in the House about enshrining the increasingly controversial liability shield in our trade agreements, particularly at a time when Congress is considering whether changes need to be made in U.S. law. And the point here is that, and they don't say it explicitly, but this is what it's illustrating. These trade deals supersede the domestic, the ability for the countries that participate to have sovereignty, essentially, over their own laws that are not regulated by these trades. So in other words, if the United States wanted to strip this type of liability or change it in any way going forward, and they had signed this trade deal, which enshrined these liability protections, these companies could then sue the United States for any expenses that were incurred as a function of these of the United States deciding we want different protections for people online. Now, let's just, you know, for the sake of argument, we can be agnostic as to whether this the liability is appropriate or not. It illustrates this problem with these trade deals. And this applies to, like, maybe we can't strengthen our union deals relative to the our union laws relative to the trade deal. Maybe we can't strengthen consumer protections. Maybe certain antitrust. We don't know because it's not fully clear what's in this deal. But that is the dynamic that's problematic. This investor state resolution, dispute resolution committees that sit on these. I don't know if you have any thoughts about that, Brandon, but I just wanted to get that out of the way because it was just sitting right in front of me.
I mean, my only thought on it, you would think that this would be a problem for conservatives, right? You would think that people who are really interested in American sovereignty and borders and protecting the right of America to be the greatest country on the planet would feel threatened by the ability for foreign countries, for foreign nationals, for any sort of company that exists outside or is owned by a non-American to basically prevent America from looking after its citizens to the best of its ability or through democratic processes, right? So I think it really does poke holes in the argument that the main issue that they are concerned with is sovereignty, and it's right. More of a...
Yes, I think that's true. And I think that came up in the TPP. But of course, I think what we've also seen under Trump relative to any other closely held position that conservatives have had in this country in the past 25 years, they can go out the window in 5 minutes.
Can I just say really 30 seconds? 20-year anniversary of the Seattle protests last week. And one of the most infuriating, stupid things was seeing, corporate trade advocates say, well, now we have what the Seattle protesters wanted. Because Trump is doing is saying instead of international institutions, let's basically have bilateral trade agreements that are potentially even worse in terms of corporate power. And the Seattle protests and the people who protest things like NAFTA are actually going back to the 90s were highly globalized. And they were about creating a totally different set of environmental and labor conditions. So conflating those two things is highly wrong.
All right, let's check out this clip. Nancy Pelosi on Friday, and we'll play a clip from that later, Thursday, announced that they will be introducing articles of impeachment on Monday, and we may cover this live. I'm not sure. There will be essentially the attorneys for all the committees will be arguing as to whether articles of impeachment should be introduced. I think that could be interesting. We'll see. But here is Doug Collins. He is the minority leader, the ranking member of the Judiciary Committee on the Republican side.
Like WASP, Rudy Giuliani.
And he is from Georgia. He's a little testy these days because he did not get appointed the interim senator to replace Johnny Isaacson's, who's resigning because of apparently health interests. And he's a little bit pissy about it because he's been doing all this work to impress Donald Trump. Donald Trump wanted Doug Collins, and that's not going to happen. And I would just note, it's going to be interesting to see if a vote in the Senate is going to put pressure on this new interim senator from Georgia, because if they felt super confident that Georgia was a state that wanted to be closely hewed to Donald Trump, Doug Collins would be sitting in that seat or, you know, come January. But here's Doug Collins answering what should be, I mean, for the Republicans, a pretty easy question to answer. Because Doug Collins kept saying that Donald Trump was concerned about corruption, and yet he never brought up the words corruption in any general sense in the phone call that Donald Trump released to prove that he was interested in corruption. Now, there's other things, of course. He's cut funding for anti-corruption efforts, and they never even wanted an actual investigation into Burisma or Biden or 2016. They just wanted an announcement about the investigation. But here's Doug Collins. Let's see if anybody can figure out what the hell he's talking about here.
Yes, you keep saying that the president was concerned about corruption, but in neither of those phone calls he mentioned the word corruption. Why didn't the president mention the word corruption and instead ask the Ukrainian president to investigate the Bidens?
Well, that's pause it for like one second. Now, I'm sorry to interrupt, but just also keep in mind that these are the same people who say that if the words quid pro quo are not being used in the context of a bribe, then it's not a quid pro quo. However, the lack of the word corruption in a call that is ostensibly only about corruption, that's almost laughable, according to Collins.
Read between the lines.
Yes.
Why didn't the president mention the word corruption and instead ask the Ukrainian president to investigate the Bidens?
Well, that's almost like saying, why don't you ask, you know, frame your questions differently. He said this is what he wanted looked into. What? He said, can you, as he said, help us as a country because we're trying to heal. We've had, as Mr. Jordan said earlier and did a great job at, we had just come off the Mueller hearing, which was most all of you covered and found to be a total disaster for the impeachment narrative that the Democrats have been saying. What we're simply saying here is that the issue was what happened on that call. And then there became all these stories from the whistleblowers about all these things that supposedly happened. And since then, fact witnesses and even hearsay evidence has said, no, that's not what happened. So my question, I go back to something. And everyone, if Mr. Nadler stands here, ask him this question. He said it almost 20 years ago, that we should never accept a report from another entity and just accept it and rubber stamp it. I have a question for Mr. Nadler. Is he just simply going to rubber stamp this to get to the two things that I've said, the clock and the calendar?
Well, thanks.
Thank you. I'll wave away, and then I'll ask another question.
Well, I mean, I just want to jump in here and say, as a minority, I disavow this man. He's not my leader. I don't accept this man. Although I did appreciate that he went just full. What's the giant chicken in Hanna-Barbera cartoons who has the sort of southern drawl, but speaks quite
Foghorn Leghorn.
They went full Foghorn Leghorn there for a second.
That's just stunning. He has no answer for that. Not even like a. Yeah, totally. There was a British comedian, Harry Enfield, who used to say, like, his whole routine, he would almost just look down on the ground and just race through it because he was afraid, he said. And so he figured he'd just get it over with. And there was no time for anybody to laugh as he was doing it.
It's college presentation. It's going to the well too much. Total college presentation you didn't prepare for energy.
They don't need to do anything, though, right?
Right.
I mean, they don't really. When they are presenting this to Fox News, they don't need to do anything more than that. They just need to sort of swat it away, and they know Fox News is not going to cover it. And that's.
Yeah, they need their body language to look right and then just some words to come out. And then right. They'll be fine.
Of course. Yeah. I mean, it's all about the framing of the question.
Which, frankly, well.
That's like saying he should have done something not wrong.
Lisa Page. Where's the whole Peter Straka? All right. Oh, folks. I should tell you this right now. It's the holiday season, and folks apparently do a lot of online shopping around these times for gifts and whatnot. Hanukkah is falling at the same time as Christmas this year, so I'm actually shopping around this time. Usually, I'm not even worried about it because I've already done my Hanukkah thing, and then I just watch everybody else freak out about Christmas. But now, on top of that, we're being warned about e-skimming. Apparently, this is when cyber criminals watch online shopping carts in order to steal credit card and debit card information from websites and mobile apps. Other information captured, they'll get your names, they'll get your date of birth, they'll get your account numbers, they'll get your passwords, they'll get your location, your emails. Targeted businesses include retailers, ticket selling sites, travel-related companies, and more, all the things that we use during the holidays, and frankly, every day. Every time you bank, every time you shop online, you can be vulnerable to cyber criminals. Now, you've heard me talk about LifeLock. They're a pioneer in identity theft protection. Well, now Norton, which goes way back, they were one of the first in consumer cybersecurity. They've joined forces with LifeLock to help protect your cyber safety. A Norton 360 with LifeLock membership, it gives you all-in-one protection device. It gives you device security, identity theft protection, and a VPN for online privacy and more. If there's an identity theft problem, they have specialists who will work to fix it. No one can prevent all cybercrime and identity theft. No one can monitor all transactions at all businesses. But Norton 360 with LifeLock is a powerful ally for your cyber safety until December 8th. Folks, just over the weekend, sign up and get a special radio offer. You can save up to 40% off your first year by going to norton.com/majority. That's 40% off Norton 360 with LifeLock at norton.com/majority. Also, oh, this is exciting. You've seen these, right, Brandon?
I have.
You've been in the studio before.
I just want to say, I didn't realize this was a political show. You know, you're spreading a globe earth propaganda on to your followers.
That's right. This is actually,
Jesus Christ. This is
anti-flattery.
Can we wait before we read the ad? Can we just let's wait to set it up and say, this is the most terrifying Juku meme I've ever seen.
Yeah, here we go. Exactly. Super globalist.
I don't know if this
here.
Is helping us.
Super
now.
Globalist. support for today's show comes from Mova Globes. Mova Globes turn all on their own. Look at this. Look at that.
They're beautiful.
I love these things.
They
legit I'm supposed to bring them home. They can sit on or off a base. I've got two of the plexiglass ones over there. In any setting with ambient lighting. I've been told it's the light that does it that makes them move.
That's
is that
amazing.
Was that a, was somebody telling me was that a lie?
I don't believe that.
I don't know about that.
They have hidden magnets which provide the movement, but I think someone told me it had something to do with the light, but I don't know if that's the case. But look at that. The one on the left is about to move on its own, I think.
It's right. A miracle. Magnets. How do they work?
Exactly. They have over 40 different designs, including world maps, outer space, famous artworks, something for everyone. The Outer Space Collection even features graphics provided by NASA and the Jet Propulsion Laboratories, complete with planets, moon, asteroids, constellation designs. It's a great gift for the person who has everything. The one I have in my hand, or at least one of them, is what the Earth looks like if you were in a space vehicle.
That's debatable.
Well, I mean, from a distance.
Also, it is powered by ambient light. It says
it is. That's nuts.
That's amazing.
And they got globes with Captain James Cook's. I think it's his travels, and so there's stuff that obviously wasn't charted yet, and so you have the old maps. You can get one with fine art. I mean, there's a whole host of things. They're a great gift for. Really, they cut across. This is what we call a four-quadrant gift. You give this to your kids. You give it to your parents.
I know a lot of people who have those. I've seen one with the moon. Do they have the moon?
Yes, and they have Mars.
Yeah.
There's I mean, it's pretty amazing. People can check it out. Go to movaglobes.com/majority. Use the code majority. Get 15% off your first purchase or any purchase maybe. This is the biggest deal of the year. It's only valid for a limited time. Hurry over to Mova. It's MOVA globes.com/majority. Use the code majority for 15% off your purchase. Cool gifts. Boom. You're done. You've done your Christmas shopping.
And everyone's happy.
The only other thing I could tell you, which I think is also a good Christmas gift, but for me, finding the site was a huge boon. For some reason, I have this problem. I don't know if other people have this problem, but I think all lamps are ugly.
Hmm.
Like, I can't picture lamps in the house.
Oh, no.
A-L-A-U.
It's hard to find a good lamp. But, obviously, lighting is super important.
Tiffany lights all the way.
Well, here's the thing. Lamps Plus has over 55,000 designs.
That's amazing.
On their website of lamps. There is no type of lamp.
For you.
There is no type of lamp. They have been helping customers love their everyday spaces for over 40 years with chandeliers, ceiling lights, table lamps, more. The light itself is like the jewelry for the home, they say. Lamps Plus is the nation's largest lighting retailer. Like I say, over 55,000 designs. They have top brands. They have their own exclusive designs in lighting, home furnishing, and decor. You don't have to guess at what the designs will look like or wander around the aisles of big box store or go to 1,500 different sites. Lamps Plus has videos with design tips. All the photos on the site tell you which light fixtures or furniture or pieces are featured, so it's easy to buy what you like. They have a large selection. Apparently, this is very popular. Minka Laveri. Have you heard of Laveri? It's lighting that will transform your home into wonderful living areas.
Matt was talking about this the other day.
Minka Laveri is known for designs that blend function and style using innovative materials. I like my lighting to be pretty straightforward. Oh, wait, I just had the, I got a set of table lamps that have a USB plug in them.
There we go.
And it's
now
subtle.
We're speaking Sam's
now,
language.
Exactly. I like my stuff to be functional. But these are also stylish. They're like minimalist. That's the kind of stuff I like.
Stylish USB 3.0.
Exactly. It really, you wouldn't even know that the USB thing is there, but it's super convenient. I don't know what to tell you, folks. That's what I like. But they have all sorts of like.
I heard Sam on the phone with a woman once going, I have a very Japanese aesthetic.
I did never say that. There's another one. They have like the touch table lamps.
That's awesome.
Where you touch the, they're sort of like mid-century modern. Those are another couple of ones that
I
love.
I'm going to be using this
site. I have some stories about those.
Honestly.
Yes, no doubt.
Yes. You will find what you like and you won't have to go all over the place. 55,000 designs. And now you can get up to 50%. Off of hundreds of those lights, furniture, and decor between November 25th and December 24th. That is now. That's 50% off during the Lamps Plus holiday sale, November 25th through December 24th. Go to lampsplus.com/majority to start saving today. That's lampsplus.com/majority. All right, we will put links, of course, in the YouTube and in our podcast descriptions. So let's get to this. Let's just play this clip, Nancy Pelosi. I want to talk and Brandon, get a little bit of your perspective on impeachment, how it's been going, what they've been doing. But here is Nancy Pelosi. Here is Nancy Pelosi going in on impeachment. This was yesterday yesterday morning.
Today, I am asking our chairman to proceed with articles of impeachment. I commend our committee chairs and our members for their somber approach to actions which I wish the president had not made necessary. In signing the Declaration of Independence, our founders invoked a firm reliance on divine providence. Democrats, too, are prayerful. And we will proceed in a manner worthy of our oath of office to support and defend the Constitution of the United States from all enemies, foreign and domestic.
You know, the language gets a little bit colorful and silly.
Prayerful?
In this. And,
really?
And yeah. but the bottom line is, you know, they're all so nervous and they are all, it's a historical event. And they know that history is going to look back upon this. And, she's competing against, I guess, really for modern times against what's his face for I can't even Newt Gingrich, in terms of the way that she's going to be perceived. And so they go.
So she should go for it. She should go, we need to have laser beams with weapons to patrol exactly. neighborhoods to encourage black kids to learn. She should do a Gingrich impression.
The thing is, they're speeding this through. It seems to me to be a and as much as Jonathan Turley would have us believe otherwise. We're still basically in the median between the fastest impeachment, that would be Johnson's, and the slowest, I guess, which was Bill Clinton's. One of the things that my understanding is about impeachment, however, is that Donald Trump, once he's out of office, will not be able to be pardoned for anything he's been impeached for, even if he doesn't get convicted in the Senate. Which is an interesting twist on this. So I wonder if they're going to be bringing up a lot of obstruction charges and stuff related to the Mueller reports. But Brandon, what's your take on impeachment?
Well, I mean, obviously, I think Trump should be impeached, right? I think that goes without saying. The arguments I've heard against impeachment really sort of rely on Trump's ability and the Republicans' ability to weaponize essentially the complex victimology of the Republican Party in their base, right? So the fear is that if you go after Trump with impeachment, he's going to be able to organize and mobilize his supporters to go, oh, you see, this is the world's slowest lynching. You know, this is the world's slowest crucifixion of me, an innocent. Well, not certainly not innocent, right? But just somebody who's playing the game by the rules that have been established, right? So his ability to reference other people's corruptions, you know, either soft or hard, whether that makes a difference to the voters is debatable. But from my perspective, the benefits outweigh the cost, right? I will congratulate, I guess, the Democrats, because if we were prior to impeachment, my fear was that the entire primary was going to be about impeachment. It was going to be about the various reasons we should impeach Donald Trump. And I think they've actually managed to have real discussions about real issues and not just focus on Ukraine or Mueller or Barr. They've trend towards that sometimes, but it kind of fell into the backdrop, which is good. And just from a practical standpoint, maybe this is me being a little bit idealistic, I think she seems low energy. I think Nancy Pelosi, not to put words in her mouth, kind of knows it's not going to go anywhere. They might not be able to impeach him. But if that is...
They'll be able to impeach him, but not convict him, yes. Right.
They might not be able to convict him, right? But it might hurt his chances of presidency. It might mobilize the Democratic Party base. And from my perspective, as someone who's to the further left of the Democratic Party, if they fail to do it, if they fail to hold Trump accountable for his many, many obvious crimes, no one has been more deserving of impeachment than Donald Trump, right? You know, it reveals that the system is unable to hold anyone accountable. It reveals that we can't impeach anybody. And I think that lesson, if people are able to internalize that accountability is not just being reserved for extreme cases like a Donald Trump, who everyone presents as an extreme case, that it's just not possible, then maybe people will be able to internalize that we have to have an actual change to that system, right? That culture of unaccountability that is broadly just infecting our political system.
Right. I mean, I think there's a big argument that you want to expand the articles of impeachment because articles of impeachment because of that very point that, like, you need to set down a marker. Like, I mean, if the emoluments, we're not going to hold him on issues of emoluments, then what are we basically saying to future presidents?
My guess would be, well, I could say for certainty, speaking for myself, because that's obviously the only person I could speak clearly for. If he was getting impeached on concentration camps, number one, and monuments, number two, I would talk about it 99% more than I do in this scenario.
Right.
Even as someone who supports the process,
right.
But I would feel that this is an absolute obligation.
Right. I think that's true.
No, I agree. And I think, you know, the reason it's hard for me to become super excited about the impeachment proceeding is because it has become a very kind of esoteric, you know, weaving around certain topics, right? I think that there's a layer to that, right? There's a layer of like, okay, well, we have to find a thing to impeach Trump for that does not implicate people we don't want to implicate, right? We have to find reasons that, you know, we have to be able to weave around our allies to find a crime that Trump is guilty of. And he's guilty of many crimes, by his own admission, right? You know, you can go through his long history in real estate, his long history in finance, the He's guilty of many crimes. But we have to find something he's guilty of that won't also implicate or set a bad precedent for future presidents. And then there's the second layer of, okay, but have, even if we find that thing, have we constructed a system? Has the Republican Party gone so far right? Have we become so divorced from our ability to engage in a bipartisan agreement of what that would look like that even if we find something that he and only he is guilty of, can we still do it?
Right.
Yeah, and even the thing that they found still makes the Bidens look a little bit guilty and corrupt, even though they didn't commit any crimes.
Right. Well, I mean, I think that's true as well.
That's and just to add, I just want to piggyback off just for a second, because I think the bipartisan consensus that still exists that is incredibly dangerous would be like I'm setting else literally everything else aside about the whole Russia argument. But we've talked about this many times, that if you had a sprawling investigation of how sovereign wealth and just say energy money from anywhere flows in Washington, no one in Washington besides Bernie Sanders and Ilhan Omar or AOC would want that investigation. I mean, that the type of implications of money sloshing around in our political process and influencing not just politicians, but think tanks and agencies and businesses. I mean, Trump is the very tip of the iceberg.
I mean, just to jump off that point just real quick, I think that when you're sitting from their standpoint, from the Democratic Party standpoint, from some of the more entrenched liberal media, you know, for lack of a better term, standpoint, the proximity between yourself and Trump in terms of corruption seems so wide because that's the only gap you can really notice. It's like, okay, well, there's the soft corruption of, you know,
right,
of Hunter Biden doing whatever. Then there's the soft corruption of money flowing hands and unregistered lobbyists, which is just everyday normalized thing. Then there's Trump's like, Trump is doing like real crimes, and that you expect, because that's your world, for everyone outside that world to also be obsessed with that distance between you two, between, hey, you know, Nancy Pelosi, Democratic Party, and their but I would argue that from where we're standing, from the normal person standpoint, their proximity is much closer,
right,
you know, than ours is to them.
Yeah. I mean, Donald Trump has this sort of almost like old timey level of corruption where it's like literally what they were worried about in the late 1700s. Like, what if he has some property in France and he makes a deal to
absconding with giant bags with dollar signs written on them?
I think what you're saying is correct. The irony, of course, is that Nancy Pelosi is almost more on, maybe not for the same reasons, but was one of the most reluctant people involved in the entire Democratic Party to have impeachment. And I think largely there may be some sort of like squaring to that circle. Like, it's just, it's really bad and the American people can decide. I agree with you. From the standpoint of the average citizen, I think particularly this narrow aspect of impeachment, I think, really looks like, you know, you're buried the lead here in terms of where the corruption is within the context of Washington. But my sense is that few people are paying attention to the specifics. I mean, a decent amount. But more broadly, it's the idea that he's getting impeached. And you know, I've said this until I'm blue in the face. There are half a dozen senators who want to distance themselves from Donald Trump when it comes to their reelection in 2020. And when they take this vote, it is going to be very hard to do because they're going to end up voting and these articles of impeachment are going to be abuse of power. And the abuse of power sort of like is a broad stroke that can be applied to a lot of different things. It just happens to be in this one instance. And I think that's going to be a difficult vote for some of those people to take.
Well, I mean, I would just agree with you. I think, you know, it's easy for me to be in, you know, I don't like Nancy Pelosi. We don't have similar politics. She does things I don't agree with. You know, her efficacy is not in the fields that I agree with, right? But I don't think she's stupid. In fact, I think that she is one of the most self-reflective people engaged in the impeachment process because she knows the things that we know. And you have a lot of people within that world who have normalized their own corruption to the point which they don't even conceptualize the idea that, hey, people outside this world, they're not, you know, when you mention Ukraine, they're going to go, oh, well, what about Biden? you know?
Right.
You know, you have just different layers of people who are like the people who are super focused on it. Then you have like this layer of like the legally and politically semi-erudite who are kind of paying attention. And then you have like everyone else who's like a casual listener, like, oh, they're impeaching Trump. Like finally. And I mean, if you ask someone on the street why they're impeaching Trump, they would just probably give you a number of reasons. They would give you Russia or his, you know, or the concentration camps we have at the border or the racism. They would just name off things, but it's the symbolism of the impeachment. Yeah. But I think it's in Nancy Pelosi's vested interest as those, you know, the leader of the Democratic Party establishment to essentially say, like, we don't want there to be this kind of larger litigation about our ability as a party to hold the Republicans accountable even when it matters. Like this idea of like, how long can we keep up this grift of accountability can exist, right? You know, we chose not to do it in the past, but one day if things get bad enough, we can do it. And if they go through impeachment, that's going to come up, right? It's going to come up with, well, if you can't impeach Trump, what can you really do?
Like, right. I mean, I think the lack of accountability for the Republican Party is a broad societal problem, even beyond. And maybe it's because you have people like Joe Biden going out there. It's like, as soon as, you know, Donald Trump is gone, these guys are going to be back on board with the whole sort of like, I mean, no one believes that. And the press, I had a story at the beginning of the week of like, you know, the Republicans' response to impeachment is the final nail in the coffin for the Trumpification of the Republican Party. And they have it backwards. They have it backwards. Donald Trump was not dropped from the heavens by aliens who were saying we're going to impose our chosen candidate on the Republican Party. They built this and he just showed up because he was the right size for the suit. And that was it.
Exactly. I mean, I think you have people who really, really on all sides, both the Democratic and Republican side, who have an interest in just placing Trump in this ideological and historical bubble. Like, yep. They want to pretend like there's no precursor to Trump, like he came out of nowhere, and that there's no modern context for him either. Forget the whole geopolitical context of the rise of neo-fascism and the rise of strongman leaders in Europe and, you know, and in Southeast Asia and in Asia, but just in America, the long history of fascist leaders and authoritarianism, and just the idea that we never really reflected on what are contributing factors to the rise of these movements that actually, I kind of like Peter off there, but we haven't really reflected on what our system is doing that appeals to these people. Right. You can even talk about the Stephen Miller situation, which I brought up on my own show recently, The Discourse.
Subscribe to it on Patreon.
Subscribe to it on Patreon at expanddiscourse.com.
I am a patron of it.
You should. Everyone should be, yes, a patron of it. I won't eat weird things like Michael does, but you know, I have a diet to maintain. But you know,
that was the last one.
You say that, but in reality, it feels as though, you know, you're like the Stephen Miller situation. Like when it came out that he was an avowed explicit white nationalist, someone like Steve Bannon, who was in conversation with the ideology of white nationalism, people rushed to, you know, talk about whether they were shocked or not shocked. When I felt like some people were engaged in that conversation, but then some people were like, hey, you know, the fact that Stephen Miller is an avowed white nationalist and that we have a Muslim ban and that we have 700,000 people in camps at the border, that's not a coincidence. Right.
Of course.
But it's like, not a coincidence, but like the implication here, it's not a direct causal relationship either. It's like there's an intermediate variable there that he was able to get, you know, into government. He was able to fill this role because we already had the infrastructure built that was so appealing.
He was working for Jeff Sessions.
Yeah, exactly.
It wasn't like this guy was pulled off.
He also had ICE and he had the Department of Homeland Security.
Right, but I'm saying
he had the Patriot Act.
Right, right, right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. All of it.
Well, it's interesting that you say that nobody wants to think about or take a look at the conditions that gave rise to Trump, because I have heard a number of the Democratic primary candidates mouthing that and paying lip service to it lately. I feel like even Amy Klobuchar might have said it at one point in time. But then the reasons they give just betray their utter ignorance and shallowness of their understanding of this stuff. And it, in a way, it like inoculates them from having to take a real look at it.
Buttigieg does that stuff all the time where he like will faint at what needs to be done. Like Trump is a symptom. He'll say things like that. And then,
you know, because that's like, that's a,
and then he'll say the cause is, of course, the deficit.
Well, and I think, right. But it's become the thinking person's thing to say in the last several months. Now that's like the new, but I think it's an interesting distinction though, to draw. Like, I watched more of the Hillary Clinton interview on Howard Stern, and I won't belabor what I said yesterday, but she told a story that she confirmed a story that's already been floating around, which is that she was sitting next to George W. Bush during the inauguration speech where Trump talked about carnage.
Said, this is some weird,
and
weird
and Bush shit. Looked at her and went, that's some weird shit. And and it's so, but I completely understand why people find that story so comforting and appealing. And I think that there is, like, when you think about people like Joe Biden and still so many people in Washington, it's like, yes, partially they're delusional about the extremism of Republicans and the depths they're willing to go. There's no doubt. But on the other hand, I have no doubt that there's still tens of thousands of private conversations going on where it's like, you know, we get that this guy's a little bit uncouth. If he goes, we will chill out a little bit on the rhetoric. And guess what we can do then? Cut Medicare, Social Security,
right,
and get back to doling out consulting contracts.
Right.
I think that corrupt bipartisan consensus still totally exists, even in the context with the rise. It's like there's three. There's Republicans as an authoritarian party, the bipartisan corruption axis, and then with Sanders and the squad – some actual sharpening ideological.
Let me just add to what Hillary Clinton could have said that would have sort of illuminated this. Her lack of saying it illuminates this problem.
Right.
He says that's some weird shit. And she looks at him and goes, let's hope he doesn't cause the death of a million people for a war of choice that we lies the country into.
Well, part of the reason she can't say that is because she voted for it.
Well, exactly.
And her husband,
she could have whispered it. She could have whispered it, and he could have said, but you voted for it. Well, I did, but it was a mistake.
Her husband went to the UK
I understand.
And said, you guys should listen to Tony Blair.
But my point being, that is the response that would be given if they weren't like, look— that was just rhetoric. It's the stuff that he does that we should really judge him on. All bad, but let's be honest, George. You immiserated a million.
But people. We all know in the Clinton Bush game, all they care about is the rhetoric, and then they get to the consulting contracts.
I mean, just to touch on Biden's delusional mentality about being able to cross aisles with the Republicans and work with them towards a better future or whatever. I mean, the question for him whenever he says that should be, well, what do you know that Obama doesn't? Right. That should be the question.
Yes.
Because frankly, it's like
I can't tell you how many times I have asked people working with candidates to ask him that question, reporters to ask that question. Yes.
He knows how to be white.
I mean, yeah, but to admit that is to admit that you're like that you feel like we have to break bread with people who are so virulently racist that they could not work with the first black president. So you can't really say that. But any candidate who expresses, within the party of Democratic Party, which still fetishizes Obama, they still fetishize him as the great communicator, like they're probably best president in the past 30, 40 years, right? That for all his faults, regardless of why he did it, he bent over backwards to commiserate with Republicans. He bent over backwards to find common ground. He went over, but he was willing to do whatever they wanted.
Cut
to
Social Security.
And they refused to do it. So for a party that is so concerned with finding the next Obama, right, the question for everyone who's talking about this bipartisan appeal they can sort of manage or cobble together once Trump's out of office, they should be forced to say, okay, well, what makes you better than Obama?
Exactly.
Like what do you know that Obama does not know?
From that perspective, Sanders treats Biden the most respectfully.
Especially Joe Biden.
Specifically Joe Biden, because, he's the one who's been making this claim. He was there. Like, you and him couldn't do this before. And you walked across the, Pennsylvania Avenue to give Mitch McConnell whatever he wanted when it came time for the fiscal cliff. I mean, you still weren't able to do it. Let's play this. I know Michael played it yesterday. I wanted to play a clip of Michael talking about how great of an ad it is, because this ad is not good.
Are you serious?
Yes.
Wow.
No,
the first half of the ad is objectively good.
I think the ad is bad, and I will tell you why. Now, I think it's
okay. Let me do this for you. I think the ad is good. Pause it.
Okay.
All right, go ahead.
The reason why this ad is bad is basically something that Brandon had said before, which was that the Republican Party is completely and wholly built around aggrievement. And this ad, I think Donald Trump could take this ad and with just a couple of different tweaks, use it for himself.
Bad general election ad, great Democratic primary ad.
Very possibly.
Oh, yeah.
Very that possibly.
Was and I, we are
oh,
currently okay.
I
didn't
know. Oh, no. I think what I said actually is that if you – I think in the general, if you cut the second half of this out and just made it about him looking like a boob, that maybe because they respond to like being emasculated. But – but the violin part, not good general election. The
Republicans don't care about what Europeans think, and they certainly
it even goes further than that.
Canadians,
they are almost knee jerk.
Yeah,
their response is opposite.
This is like Trump dunking on them, baby.
Right.
I mean, they like that. I mean, if you look
it looks
you know,
like a cuck though.
That's the good part about it. Like,
looks like a cuck.
It will make Trump upset.
Like, yes, that's the point.
But that doesn't necessarily translate to like electoral failure.
Democratic primary voters. I think there's some truth to that.
I think that's it's possible that and you know, and I think frankly there's people who are saying the same thing about Biden. Going after that guy yesterday.
Oh, I said the same thing.
People like Joe Biden because they think he's a tough guy and he's going to bully the bully. He's going to beat up Trump.
Oh, I think the guy yesterday works well in the general election.
Mm.
I do. I think.
On the aggrievement tip, like Trump is going to do that no matter what. Like it doesn't matter how much or how little ammunition the Democrats give him. If Kathy Griffin does a mean tweet about him, he's going to act like he's being crucified.
Well, yeah, that's my point is that they need at least just some. This just feeds in that just becomes chum for that aggrievement.
Like they've got
tour.
No shortage of chum, though.
It's better
waiting for it to come along when this ad was made.
It's better, dude, you look like an idiot. As a play versus how dare you, sir?
I personally think that for the general election, the key is you need to motivate a marginal part of your base to get them to come out. And you need to depress as much of the other side as you can. And the one thing I think that is going to depress the other side is, frankly, attacking the Republican Party. Because if the Republican Party is attacked as Donald Trump just wasn't up to the task because the Republicans are so bad. They never gave the health care that they promised. They never got rid of the Affordable Care Act. They never built the wall that they said they were going to do. And the idea being that, like, it's useless, Trump voters, and even your superhero couldn't get the Republican Party to do anything. So why bother? I think that's the only tack to take with them. This stuff, it really is just this is. Just to get the MSNBC viewers out to vote
for
Biden.
Well, there you
go.
Yep. World leaders caught on camera laughing about President Trump. Several world leaders.
Hell, that French guy.
Yeah. Trump. They're laughing at him.
Look at
him.
Them from Europe.
My administration has accomplished more than almost any administration in the history of our country.
They added that laughter. They added that laughter.
That's right. Mocking and ridiculing him for being completely off balance.
Allies are deeply worried about him. They say he's becoming increasingly isolated. Something is very
for me. Look how mean they're being to him.
For me, it's good because I know he saw it. I know Trump watched it. I know it upset him personally. It's always funny to hurt Trump's feelings.
I like how they have his face pockmarked in that last clip.
But to be really clear,
they're showing like some pockmarks on his face.
Part violin, not general election material.
Well, of course,
but your MSNBC material.
Well, but that's the thing. It's like people going like Wolf Blitzer, Brian Williams, help F those guys.
Brian Stelter said something bad about Trump. Uh-oh.
Right, exactly.
Well, what they're trying to do here and what they need to do, I think, is to unite the traditional base of the Democratic Party that votes in a primary, which includes both kind of urbane, white, professional, managerial liberals and Black voters in the South. And I mean, I'm not a total wonk on this, but as far as I understand it, those two segments of the base have not united behind a single candidate yet, which might create an opening for a candidate like Bernie to come in and win.
Well, I will say, if you want to unite black voters behind you, maybe appearing with the person multiple times. Like this video ad really centers Justin Trudeau, who, you know, maybe like cool it with that one for a few months. Like, I found it funny. Like, I found it a little funny, but, you know, it's just not...
I almost forgot about that.
This ad is Jack Ryan meets Rachel Maddow. Like, this is a good Democratic primary
ad.
And
I'd be delighted to sit down and compare my IQ to yours if you'd like, Frank.
I just don't see
we're gonna get to that.
These, like, smarty pants PMC liberals uniting behind someone who's so obviously embarrassing.
That Joe Biden is embarrassing?
Yeah. His brain is melting in real time. And he sniffs the hair like the Hillary people don't like him.
Joe Biden.
The finger suck was weird.
The finger suck was fine.
That was the least weird thing. I would give that one a pass.
Yeah, I would say.
I just saw the image. I didn't see the video.
Here is, a lot of people are arguing that Joe Biden is getting testy as a function of his old age.
Trump and Biden have the questions in the bottom of Jell-O cups.
Here is Biden. In 88 when he's running. And I mean, on some level, there is an argument, I guess. How do you beat Donald Trump? You get another guy who's like Donald Trump. And this is like the sort of the most Trumpish clip of Joe Biden. He's a little more adept, although to be fair, this was also 30 some odd years ago. So, you know, he may be a little bit sharper then.
He is self-made.
I definitely want some of those vitamins where your hair gets thicker 30 years later than it was at the time. But that's we'll put that aside. Here he is. He is up in I think this is up in New Hampshire.
This is New Hampshire.
And he is part of the 1988 Democratic tour. I remember watching C-SPAN back then, actually, during this. I don't know if I watched this when it happened, but I remember Songus when he went swimming. And,
that's 92.
Was that 92? Okay, then I guess it wasn't 88.
Who did you back in 88? Please say Jesse Jackson. Just pretend.
I honestly don't even remember 88 now. Okay. Good.
Question. What law school did you attend, and where did you place in that class? And the other question could you quickly...
I think I probably have a much higher IQ than you do, I suspect. I went to law school on a full academic scholarship.
Pause it for 1 second.
That guy's
now,
an asshole.
Well, understand, the question was asked because people were still talking about how Ronald Reagan... had no standing to be president at that time. Go ahead.
Quickly, I think I probably have
a much higher IQ than you do, I suspect. I went to law school on a full academic scholarship, the only one in my class to have a full academic scholarship. In the first year in law school, I decided I didn't want to be in law school and ended up in the bottom two-thirds of my class, and then decided I wanted to stay, went back to law school, and in fact ended up in the top half of my class. I won the international moot court competition. I was the outstanding student in the political science department at the end of my year. I graduated with 3 degrees from undergraduate school and 165 credits, only need 123 credits, and I'd be delighted to sit down and compare my IQ to yours if you'd like, Frank.
If I could say one thing, I think just in my own opinion, I'm not questioning your IQ at all. I'm just saying that with the people...
Pause it for 1 second. Now, in 1988, Biden was in his 40s, I guess. Late 40s would be my guess, right?
Really an unfortunate
timeline. I got to tell you, you know, it's more or less my age. The idea that I can remember how many credits I had in college at this point.
I don't know,
he's
man. I've
his
seen
inner
you, Sam.
Buttigieg.
I don't know. One time Sam was on the phone with Dane, he was just like, I would suspect I have a higher IQ than you. I have 365 credits.
This is somebody who is like, the fact that that rolled off his tongue so quickly is very weird to me, I think.
Well, I think it's made up, but this is in the context of...
You mean that you think that was set up?
I don't think... No. I don't think Biden...
He hasn't rehearsed because it's a lie.
That's what I think.
Fabrications.
But I do think that in What It Takes about 88 campaign, I mean, they said that Biden had, even though he became a senator when he was 30, was basically... had a lot of embarrassment because he's a Delaware and Syracuse grad and not an Ivy Leaguer. And I, you know,
both of the people involved in that are pretty revolting.
I mean, the questioner is a total schmuck.
A-hole, yeah.
Total schmuck.
I don't know. I think they should circulate that ad to all the PMC liberals who like Warren and Buttigieg right now. Maybe they would throw some support to Biden.
Here is Biden responding to a climate activist.
Another one?
This is, I don't know, if did we play this one?
No,
this is another one.
Yeah, this is another one.
There are so many of
and
these.
And it is unbelievable. What I think is problematic, and it's going to be interesting to see if this narrative holds. In some respects, Biden comes off as a tough guy yesterday. In other respects, there is still the narrative that Joe Biden can't address difficult, even remotely difficult questions. In fact, it doesn't appear that he can answer any questions. And if the idea that he can't respond to anything that is even like vaguely challenging, like this stuff is obvious, that, you know, the Hunter Biden question is about as obvious a question as you would expect to get. Like,
it's going to come up.
The day this thing's broke, there should have been 12 people around a table and they should have gone through every single sentence and word that he was going to say and respond to this at every stop, at every time.
Probably did.
I don't know if they did.
Remember it.
I don't know if they did. I think he's too arrogant, actually. And he thinks like, I got it. And here's another example of this. Watch this.
I'm Aaron. And what I'm wondering is, how can young folks trust that you're going to fight for us on climate change when your climate advisor, your handpicked climate advisor, served on the board of a fossil fuel company?
That is not the person who's doing my advising.
And by Heather's the way,
Heather worked for us in the administration.
No, I know. But she
look at my
for,
record.
Yeah.
Look at my record. Just look at the record.
I have President Biden, Vice President Biden.
Well, I tell you what, if you looked at my record and you still doubt about my commitment, then you should vote for somebody else.
I've looked at your climate plan. Why doesn't it ban fracking?
Why doesn't it ban fracking? Because you can't ban fracking right now. You got to transition away from it. Look, you're going to ban fracking all across America right now, right?
I would love to.
Yeah, I'd love to, too. I'd love to make sure we can't use any oil or gas, period, now. Is it possible?
Yes.
Well, you ought to vote for somebody else.
There you go.
I like the strategy. I want to see how it plays out.
Yeah, exactly.
Long term.
How many times can I say that to somebody?
He's going to say to every American.
Yeah.
He's kind of trying the Trump thing on Democrats right now. Because, like, they love to be topped by Trump. He's their daddy. He's the only one who can get away with insulting his own base. Biden, I don't know if that's going to work on Democratic primary voters.
I don't want anybody to grab me by the shoulders like that ever in my life.
Super creepy.
It's a little weird, but from my perspective, it looks like Biden has an underlying personality flaw of being incredibly insecure and getting incredibly aggressive when he's confronted, which goes back to the 80s, obviously, which is now being exacerbated by, you know, senescence, essentially, right? So, like, he's getting frustrated when asked questions and going towards his normal behavior, like, I'm going to be very aggressive, but, like, it's just not there anymore. Like, it's hard to watch sometimes, actually. It's a little bit
that
sad.
That is how men traditionally behave, though, when confronted. Like, that's a component of, like, classic masculinity that may not read as negative to a lot of people.
I think there's a possibility with that as well, frankly. All right, well, look, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to be talking to David Feldman. Brandon, if you would stick around, and we're going to have some laughs with David. Hopefully, maybe, or maybe it'll just be disturbing. Sometimes it is when we talk to him. We'll go through some of these other clips. All right, quick break. Be right back. David Feldman.
Say to calls for some sort of universal health care or something like Medicare for All from some of the other people running
well,
the Democratic primary?
I think they're well-intended. I think they mean it as intended. It's not, I'm not. But here's the deal. Right now, you have this overwhelming number of employers who are paying in their health care plan. Why let them off the hook?
We are back, Sam Seder on the Majority Report. Folks, I just have to read this, and it's apropos from what during the break, I call into our caller, our guest, and literally as soon as I picked up the phone, I just got an earful, and this is not, he's not going to be too happy about this either. We played this clip of Joe Biden earlier. And maybe we can cut this on to the clip when we clip it, because we played this clip of Joe Biden earlier where he was talking about his 3 degrees. And I didn't understand any of that. I don't understand how you get 3 Bachelor of Arts degrees simultaneously. I thought it's just your major or whatever it is. And he did all this dancing around about what he did in law school. Well, this piece from September 22nd, 1987 by James Dickinson in the Washington Post. Joe Biden admitted yesterday that some of his boasts about his college academic achievements were untrue, including the claim that he had finished in the top half of his class at law school. And this was out of that exchange. That's very unfortunate. The guy also lied. But with that said, and like I said, I got a big earful from our next guest about what we were doing wrong, apparently, on this show. David Feldman. David, welcome to the program.
Hello. Hi. I'm always glad to be back. Just a little surprised by the tenor of your show today, Sam.
Yeah.
A little surprised.
You mentioned that. Now, do you want to be more specific?
Well, you know, 100 million people stay home on Election Day, right?
Right.
You know that? Yeah. And I'm not trying to be critical of you, but it's this lack of civility. They're not coming to vote because of shows like yours where you team up on good people. You know, I don't agree with Joe Biden. I'm like David Brooks. You know, I'm a socialist from way back.
Okay.
Did you read David Brooks?
Did you read
David Brooks today? He used to be a socialist. And that means you have bona fides you should be listened to. And I'm an old lefty.
Yeah.
I'm an old lefty, Sam.
Yeah.
You know that.
I know that.
But you're not going to win beating up on good people like Joe Biden. He's a good man. I have problems with him. I you know, in principle, I want Bernie. You know that.
Right.
In principle.
In principle. But are you suggesting there's a difference between your principal and your yeah, here he is, David Brooks. We have a picture of him up there as a social Democrat back in
Republicans
the day.
Republicans can have him.
And but so what do you mean by in principle?
Like
what do you mean in principle?
In principle, we need to listen to the adults and have a civil conversation and not attack Joe Biden because sometimes he tells the truth and sometimes he doesn't. The Democrats, this is a party, we're a big tent, Sam. There should be room for facts and lies. And to go after, you don't win that way. You know, there should be room for somebody who had no hair and then suddenly has hair. There should be room for a candidate who, when his teeth got brown, he, like Biden did, he sent his brown teeth off to prison because they were super predators, and he got them capped and made them nice and white because he didn't want brown super predator teeth. And there's room for everybody in our party. And you sit there, you just sit there, and we're not going to win. We don't win this way. You know, like the way you treat, it was heartbreaking to see Kamala Harris have to walk away. She could have won. She could have won the nomination and beat Trump. But the Bernie, they destroyed her.
But wait, she could have won.
I still think she can win. Yeah, I still think she can win.
But how could she win if there was no support for her?
There is support for her. Ask all my friends who know something, who know politics and policy. We know she can win. She can win the nomination. But, you know, she just couldn't take. She had it with the Bernie bros, you know.
So wait, so you're saying she just like was just sick of it? She was sick of it and just was. So she walked away. It wasn't that other people walked away from her.
No, we lost a good candidate because the way Bernie treated her during the debates with, outperforming her, the way he outperformed her. That's not how you win alliances, by outperforming your opponents in debates. That's not how you bring the party together and hold them accountable for their policy on Medicare for All. She was for putting the insurance companies out of business, and then she's not. That's good. That's how you win in the general.
We lost her. No, but now, what is your theory on how she can still win? That's what I'm curious about now that she's not a candidate.
Am I saying this with authority and a timbre in my voice?
Yeah.
She can win. Everybody knows that. See how loud, when I say this loudly and categorically?
Right.
How can you argue with this? It's a fact. The Democrats are centrists. Do you hear how loudly I'm saying this? That makes it a fact. And Kamala can win. But don't get me wrong. I love Bernie in principle. I'm an old lefty like David Brooks. I want all the things you want. But, you know, the way you mock Mayor Pete.
Right.
I
well, let me.
It doesn't help the party. Sam,
all right, David, since you brought up Mayor Pete, and I want you.
I sense racism. I have to say that because Mayor Pete is an African-American.
No. Mayor Pete
sense,
is not an African-American.
I sense racism. You have that white privilege, and you don't see how important it is for young gay girls who are transitioning to see Mayor Pete and say, you know what? I can be our first African-American president. You don't understand. You don't understand the importance
of
that.
Look. David, let's play a clip. Of
you know what, I'm going to say something. I don't mean to play the Jew card with you, Sam.
Yeah.
But you don't know what it means to be afraid.
Well,
and you have to.
I'm
you
Jewish.
You don't know what fear means.
No,
that is how you appeal to the Democrats, by preying on their fears.
Now, wait a second.
You got to vote your fears.
Now, wait a second. How can you play the Jew card on me? I'm Jewish.
Yeah, I don't think you've ever known what it's like to be alienated and isolated. You don't understand identity politics. You mock it. That's why you I know you want Bernie, and so do I. Believe me, I want everything Bernie wants. I just don't think we can get there right now.
What, when, when do you think we can get there?
I want everything he wants. I want everything he wants.
Okay.
Everything.
All right. Well, look. Let me ask you about this clip, David Feldman. You have you've sit here. You have criticized us about for.
And don't get me wrong. I have a lot of respect.
Okay.
For the work you're doing.
I appreciate that. But you've criticized.
I just think you're. No, I'm not criticizing you. I think you need a bigger tent.
Okay, you're suggesting that we are too narrow in our perspective because we have been, you know, attacking Mayor Pete. Here is a clip from Mayor Pete. Where he is once again using a right-wing frame. And frankly, not only using a right-wing frame, he is using the right-wing tactics of completely lying about the reality or just doesn't know it. Here is this.
Why should they be responsible for my debt?
It's a great question. You know, like climate, fiscal policy can be a question of intergenerational justice. And I know that my party's not known for worrying about deficits and the debt too much, but it's time for us to start getting into that business. Because what we've seen in Washington is that the party that talked a lot about the deficit when they were trying to kill off programs, when it came time for this corporate tax cut, turns out they don't care. There is a $1 trillion deficit now, and created under a Republican administration, which means if my party doesn't start getting interested in deficits of debt, nobody will. And I view it the same way you do, as a generational question, because, you know, I think we may not have to wait for kids and grandkids to see when those fiscal time bombs start to go off.
Okay. Now, David, I know that you think
Hang on. The tingle down my thigh is subsiding. That was amazing. Go ahead and start. Wow.
So you were really...
How is it possible that the youngest guy running is the adult in the room? Well, how is that possible?
The reality is that if you compare every president that we've had in modern times... You will find that the debt skyrockets under Republicans and and then drops under Democrats, you know, unless like the inciting event happens the day before Barack Obama comes into office and that grows and then it starts to come down until the Republicans come to town. I mean, so here he is. Putting aside the fact that he's just reciting Pete Peterson's mantra, the Nixon Commerce Secretary billionaire who, you know, went on to basically wants to cut Social Security and Medicare by creating this sort of debt hysteria. He also talks about these ticking time bombs, which he must be talking about, I guess, Medicare and Social Security, I mean, because that is consistent with the right wing talking points. And the fact that the reality, if you did care about something like that, is that his party has been far better on that accord than the Republicans, to the extent that, you know, and I don't necessarily subscribe to the idea that it's even relevant. But everything he's saying is a load of I'm sorry, is a lie.
Malarkey.
Oh, my God. I mean, this is why 100 million people stay home on election day. First of all, A, it's refreshing and different to hear a Democrat for the first time talking about fiscal responsibility. This is the first time I've ever heard the big spending party. This is new, something new, and you need to get used to that. Now, here's the other thing that, and I don't mean to.
Didn't Bill Clinton run on that exact same thing? We're going to make government meaner and leaner.
I don't want to split the party and attack the Clintons. This is not me, the Clintons, so I'm not going to do that. This is typical Bernie bro. This is your problem. And I don't mean to attack you personally, because this is not what I do, but I sense your white privilege. I do. And I'll tell you why. The Republicans, historically, as you just pointed out, they balloon the debt and the deficit. They go on a spending spree. They cut taxes for the wealthy, and they create a mess. And who steps in and cleans up the mess traditionally? The Democrats. Hmm. And you, perched in your ivory tower, think you're too good to clean up after people. Well, I've got news for you. If you want to appeal to the 99%, a lot of those people make money cleaning up. You know, these are janitors and maids and housekeepers, and you're an elitist. You're saying we're too good to clean up the mess that the Republicans left us. That's not how you win in November, Sam. I'm sorry. You're mocking people who clean up messes for a living. But I want to vote for the president who appeals to the guys and gals, the folks, who when they come home from work have to take a shower. That's who I respect. Do you take a shower when you come home from work? I do.
I don't doubt that. So you're saying I'm part of the type of workers who shower before I go to work instead of after I go to work.
No, I'm saying you don't shower enough is what I'm saying. I'm saying Bernie supporters need to shower more. And can I know we're going to wrap it up because I'm winning the argument. I'm winning this argument once again.
Well, I didn't think of it as an argument. I thought we were engaging in a conversation.
No, I win. See, that's the thing with you people. You don't know how to win. We can't, a conversation, you got to win.
Right. Okay. So go ahead.
We're coming up on today, actually, the Japanese. We're coming up on, I think it's the 30th anniversary of the surprise attack on Pearl Harbor. And, you know, I'm an old lefty from way back, right? You know that, right? Roosevelt, Democrat, okay? And he went before the American people on television the day after the Koreans, the Japanese, attacked us. And Franklin Roosevelt said yesterday, December 6th, a day that will live in infamy. And what did he say? He says, we're going to go to war with the Japanese. I have a plan, and I know how to pay for it. That was the genius of Teddy Roosevelt. He said, I mean, go back and watch Franklin Roosevelt's speech. Total focus. Total focus. He says, we're going to fight the Nazis, the Japan. We're leaning in, because that's important, to lean in, because we know our worth. And we're saying, you cannot attack us. And then he said to the American people, join me on this rendezvous with destiny, but you have a choice. You have a choice. I'm presenting to you in this speech a public option to fight the Nazis. You can choose to stay home and fight the Nazis in the private sector. And you know what? Because, and this is what you don't understand about Elizabeth Warren, what Roosevelt did is he presented the American people with a choice. They could choose the public option and fight with our army, or they can stay home and fight the Nazis, you know, in the private sector by, you know, no longer investing in Harriman Brothers and, you know, Ford and Coca-Cola and IBM, the people who were doing business with the Nazis. You could, you know, that's one way to fight the Nazis.
Right.
But when we saw how well the war was going, I know your father may be too young, but a lot of Americans opted in for the public option and said, you know what? I'm going to go. I'm going to go
years
fight
after,
the Nazis.
Right?
I'm sorry?
2 years. First there was Roosevelt said, there's a public option, and then in two years into my next term, I will present the second phase of the war option.
Yes, is this Michael Brooks?
Yes, I'm helping you out.
I'm surprised you know something that happened before 1996.
And you know why? You know, let me ask you a question. Because I don't always like your politics. I think you're a little brazen. Do you know why D-Day was so successful?
You know, David, you're going to have to educate me.
Because Winston Churchill and Eisenhower, before they stormed the beaches, they told the boys, we have a plan to pay for this. We know how to pay for this. You don't send... our fathers or your grandfather when they stormed the beaches of Anzio, if they weren't certain that all this was going to be paid for, they didn't want to leave you, their grandchildren, with intergenerational debt that Mayor Pete. I got to say, you know, I love Bernie. I do. I'm an old lefty from way back, but I got to say.
An old lefty from way back.
I got to say. I got to say, you know.
Yeah, yeah. So I've been to Anzio.
Anzio.
Yeah. I went to Anzio.
In Italy.
In Italy, yeah. Yeah. My friend David Waterman, we reenacted his grandfather having his leg blown off with army men. And they made a little video.
Not sound like respect.
You think that's funny? You think this is funny? Well, you know that Bob Dole lost his black tip felt pen at Anzio. And you think that's funny? You think that's funny? You're making fun of the greatest generation. Okay, but see, this is not how you win in November.
No,
you hate our troops.
So,
hate our troops.
All right. So just be a little bit more. I mean, you've made it clear that you, in principle, support Sanders, that you're an old time lefty. So, of course, you want everything that Bernie
from way back.
From way back.
Like David Brooks.
Like David Brooks. You and David Brooks probably in the, well, I don't know. Were you guys in the SDS together or?
Snick.
But so who are you supporting? Who is it that you think should be the nominee then? I mean, if you have such a clear-eyed vision as to who can win in the general election.
I want somebody who can defeat Trump because he is more than an existential crisis. He is a threat to our democracy, and we need to put aside our differences and pick the candidate who can beat Trump in November. Kamala, I think we should try to get her to come back in, and she can win. I just think if we apologize for, you know, poring over her policies and holding her accountable for everything she said and did. You know, yeah, it was wrong to lock up the parents of truants. She should have locked up the truants. I think you get them early into the system.
More time for them to get reformed.
More time to, I didn't hear what you said.
To get them reformed. Sorry. The earlier you get the kids into the system, the criminal justice system, the more time for them to get reformed.
I don't know about that. That seems kind of ambitious to me. Can we afford to lock them up and reform them? I mean, that sounds fiscally irresponsible. I mean, in principle, it would be nice if prison was more than being punitive and locking up people of color. In principle, I'm against that, but I don't know if we can reform these super predators.
David,
these 16-year-old kids who don't go to school. These people are dangerous.
David.
So I'm guessing you didn't like that tweet from Shuja Hader saying that someone should lock up Kamala's parents because she dropped out.
I just want to say that I love hearing the voice of somebody with an identity. I don't know who you are, but you have an identity and I respect your struggle. And I want to appeal to that. And I'm for what you want.
As long as you don't, I don't know who you are, but your struggle is my struggle. So long as you don't want to raise my taxes or unionize.
That's Jamie.
Yeah, that really means a
Jamie,
lot to me.
Jamie, I want everything you want so long as it's not a union. Or I'd like you to have a choice, you know, if you, you know, not to unionize. or make a livable wage. But your identity, I am thoroughly behind, whatever your identity is.
David, Brandon Sutton's in studio.
Sir, if I might jump in here 1 second. I'm a black speaking real quick, so I also have an identity. I've been floating the idea that...
Well, let me just say, I'm 100%. Malcolm and Martin, I read their speeches. And, you know, the thing about Malcolm and Martin was that it wasn't digging up the past. They weren't divisive. They didn't say, oh, the white man did this to us. They were forward thinking. And they told all Americans to lean in and know your worth. Right? Am I right?
First, I want to thank you for your allyship, and also, of course, you're correct. Malcolm X and Martin Luther King Jr. were famously uncritical of white people, but they said
go slowly, and they talked to, and Martin, if you read Dr. King, and I call him Dr. King, and so I'd like you to pause there and just think about the fact that I called him Dr. King and the license that affords me now. Dr. King said we need to go slowly. If you read his speeches, and Malcolm, let's go slowly. Let's not rush things. Didn't he say that?
Multiple times. That was his most famous speech, the March on Washington for Equality and Slow Incremental Change. They often leave that second part out, as you, I'm sure you're well aware.
Yes, thank you. Can you tell me all your identities so I can play to them?
Well, I lie at the intersection.
So you say you're African American.
I'm African American. I am of average height, 5'9", 5'11" in boots, Tim's.
Need more. Let's move on. I just need to know people's identity, because that's the most important thing to me.
I was just going to ask.
Do you like, you know who I like? I like Tyler Perry. I'll tell you why. Tyler Perry. Do you like Tyler Perry? I think he gave the Democrats, you know, did you see the debates? They held the debates in Tyler Perry Studios in Atlanta. And, you know, that was a big tent thing to do, to hold the debates in the – that was the Democratic Party's Medea moment. Tyler Perry – that's a right-to-work state. And the Tyler Perry Studios are non-union, and they're being sanctioned by the Writers Guild and AFTRA because Tyler Perry believes in choice. Tyler Perry, he said, I could – produce my movies in Hollywood and choose to pay my actors and writers a livable wage. But I believe in choice. I'm choosing to pay my employees starvation wages.
So I agree with...
That's what America is about, choice.
So I agree with 99% of what you just said, but I want to push back a little
bit.
Thank you. And I feel as though... You know, no, thank you.
Be aggressive. Are you being aggressive?
No.
What do you mean push back?
I'm going to take it a step further, actually.
What do you mean push back?
I'm going to take it a little bit a step further. I think that they could have had Madea on the panel. I think that, you know, there was room on that moderator panel for Madea, for Tyler Perry himself, to be questioning the candidates.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, stop silencing women of color's voices.
Yes. Absolutely. I thought it was very brave of the Democrats to have the debate in the Tyler Perry Studios, which speak volumes to the value of a right to work state. Because, and this is what I like about Joe Biden.
that he knows the middle class was built by unions, and he loves unions, but he's not afraid to take contributions from people who destroy unions. Big tent. Big tent. Big tent. Hair? No hair. Brown teeth? White teeth.
So I'm sorry. I just want to see if we could summarize all of this. You're voting for Klobuchar?
Yes. Listen, you know, I too have a father who's an alcoholic. And I don't know what her policy is, but, you know, when she talked about her father looking for grace and giving up drinking, I thought, I like this woman. I like her. I like her identity. Well,
I like her
because I identified with her identity. She has a father who is an alcoholic, and that spoke to me.
Well, David, this has been it's been very illuminating, and I think there's a lot of stuff that we need to think about.
Oh my God!
I think you've given us a lot of food for thought today, and
maybe
we'll digest this and come back with a slightly different tone in our show.
Yeah, thanks for sticking up for my identity.
I love your identity. Do I know all of it? I know. I mean, it seems to be a high pitched voice, so I'm going to assume it may not be a woman. You may be a person of shortness. I don't know.
No, that's me.
You're a person of.
I mean,
whatever,
I'm not
whatever
tall.
Whatever your identity. You're tall.
I'm not tall.
But you have a high voice. But you have a. May I say, you have a voice that, if I were testifying in court and a lawyer asked me to identify your voice, my conjecture would be a person of femininity? Is that a am I respecting you?
In what context would a lawyer ever say, can you tell from the sound of that voice what the identity of the person is? What context would that question
be? During the OJ trial, there was a conversation about whether or not somebody had an African-American voice or not, whether or not you could tell if a person was African-American or not on the phone. And I made a promise to myself after that I would never decide a person's identity just by the sound of their voice. Because that's what this country is about, identity.
100%.
Well,
yes, 100%. Listen, whether you're a man, a woman, a person of shortness, I don't care, as long as you don't unionize or ask for a livable wage or raise my taxes. But I support everything about you as long as I can keep my money.
This is everything that we talk. Thank you. This distilled the entire modern professional class of Democratic Party and most major media personalities.
Thank you for your service.
Yes, David, we appreciate your coming on. Like I say, it'll give us a lot to think about.
Okay. Did I win? Because I'm trying to show you how to win in November.
I feel like you certainly won on, you know, it depends on what the metric is, but I think certainly there are metrics in which you won today. And so,
well, give Mayor Pete a chance. Give Mayor Pete, just listen to Mayor Pete with fresh eyes and fresh ears.
We will do that.
McKenzie, gotta love McKenzie.
David Feldman, and David, my understanding is your show is 8 days a week. Is that right?
Eight days a week. We added an extra day in the calendar, and each episode is 29 hours. I have to admit, 4 of those hours are a waste of everybody's time, but there's a pony somewhere in all that horseshit.
The David Feldman
Show. And I'd like to invite, and it's for all identities.
Yes,
for all identities.
Very, very big tent. David Feldman, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Oh my gosh. There you go.
That's the funniest thing that's ever happened. But it's also terrifying because it's like...
Good to have centrists on the show, though.
Yeah,
yeah, it's important.
It's finally to have that perspective fully articulated.
Look, we're going to take a quick break, head into the fun half of the program, wherein we will take some of your phone calls. We'll talk a little bit more, some of the clips that we have. And we'll watch a really heartfelt a song from a Purdue National Sales Conference in Phoenix back in 2011. Purdue, the manufacturers of OxyContin. And 2011, of course, was probably at their peak profitability and setting up a multitude of generations for incredible immiseration. And
it's good to see what they were doing with that profit at the height of their popularity.
Exactly. All right, quick break. Be right back. Fun half. Oh, wait, what am I talking about? Hey, folks, don't forget, this program relies on your support. You can become a member by going to jointhemajorityreport.com. When you do, you are supporting this show, and we give you extra content in addition to that. And you get the first half of the show without commercials. So it's your support that makes this show possible. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. You can gift a show, I think, there as well. I don't know if Cuck Nation still works as a URL, but I think if you go to jointhemajorityreport.com, you can. Yeah, it seems to time out now. I think we didn't, but you can gift a subscription. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. But right now, if you go to Just Coffee, they have a 30% off sale. So you can try any of the types of Just Coffee there. You can try the Majority Report blend. You will love it. Also, don't forget the AM Quickie. You can sign up for that for free, ladies and gentlemen. You get the full show for free. 5 minutes every morning, top headlines at amquickie.com. Today is Friday. At one point this week, it was Tuesday. Michael, what happened?
Incredible show with Big Waz, Wozni Lambre, and Slavoj Žižek. Some people have told me that this was the most effective Žižek interview they've ever seen in English. And actually, legit, because there's some lack of clarity about really, I mean, the depth of his thinking and what he's actually saying, and I think it actually came across really well. So I'm really excited about that. This Sunday's primer or illicit history is with Bronwyn Mehta from Cambridge University, and we're finally covering Egypt in depth on the illicit history series. So patreon.com/TMBS, Michael Brooks Show on YouTube. Get us to 100,000 subs. We're getting pretty close now. And I will say there's a link on the website to the February 7th Michael Brooks Show, Bellhouse Live Show, the mega show. With so far, we've got Ilona Minkowski, Ben Burgess, Harvey Kay, and this gentleman.
This guy.
Very excited. Snag your tickets. Come see us.
Do I have to buy a ticket or do I kind of just show up?
You have to purchase a ticket and wait in line. No, of course you're not. What are you talking about?
Brandon, why don't you plug your show?
Oh, yes. If you are interested in listening to more of me and my lovely co-host, Richard and Adair, you can find my podcast, The Discourse, on SoundCloud, on Spotify, on iTunes, just by searching The Discourse. The URL on SoundCloud is the easiest, probably, at soundcloud.com/expandthediscourse.
Jamie.
This week on the Antifada, Sean sits down with fellow socialist train guy Justin Rozniak, a.k.a. Do Not Eat, to get at the real and sordid history behind Robert Zemeckis' 1988 blockbuster, Who Framed Roger Rabbit? How the hell was this crazy film made? What does it tell us about the history of public transit in Los Angeles and elsewhere? Why is Elon Musk full of crap? How would a rail fit into the Green New Deal and socialism more broadly? Most importantly, how did our fans get us to watch hentai? Patreon.com/TheAntifada.
Matt.
Yeah, Literary Hangover. We did The Crucible by Arthur Miller. It's got both Salem Witch Trials and McCarthy era Red Scare stuff to it. So a little bit for everybody there. Check it out.
They're upset I'm dating Marilyn Monroe. It's like what they did to the witches. I bet a rite of play.
Arthur Miller does not sound like that.
I do a guest appearance as Arthur Miller at the House on American Services Committee hearings. Oh, my bad, Senator McCarthy. You couldn't get Marilyn Monroe's number even if you tried.
Well, Chads are a marginalized group in this society, so.
Quick break, fun half.
You are in for it.
All right, folks, 646-257-3920. See you in the fun half.
Who sent us this?
Anarchy. Alpha males are back. Back, 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 back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back, back.
Just as delicious as you can imagine.
The alpha males are back, 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 back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back, 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 back.
Just want to degrade the white man.
Alpha males are back, back.
I take all of it in my throat.
Alpha males are back.
Almost says what?
The alpha males are back, 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 back.
You are a madman!
And the alpha males are back, back, back.
I am a total cunt.
Can we bring back DJ Danerke's song, please?
Yeah, or a couple of them. Just put them in rotation.
DJ Danerke.
Well, the problem with those is they're like 45 seconds long, so I don't know if they're enough of a break.
That's fucking nonsense.
Hey, fuck! Reminder!
I do not have Parkinson's.
And the alpha males are
psych. Fuck them. Fuck them.
Almost says what?
What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What?
Almost says what?
Hell out of the bank. Hell out of the bank. Hell out of the bank. Hell out of the bank.
Have you tried doing an impression on a college campus?
I think that there's no reason why reasonable people across the divide can't all agree with this. Psych.
And the alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black, 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 black Africans. And the alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black, 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 black.
Donald Trump out there, doesn't a little part of you think that America deserves to be taken over by jihadists? Keep it at 100. Can't knock the hustle.
Come on! Fuck them! Fuck them! Fuck them!
Things I do for the bigger game plan.
By the way, it's my birthday!
My birthday!
Happy birthday to me, Jew boy!
I have a thought experiment for you.
And the alpha males are back, back. Africans are black, black. Alpha males are back, back. Africans are black.
Blasphemy around here. I am a total
pussy,
total,
pussy, total, pussy, total,
pussy, total, pussy, total, pussy, total, pussy, total, pussy, total, pussy, total, pussy, total, pussy, total, pussy, total, pussy, total, pussy, total, pussy, total, pussy.